理课堂听 class.com。
Section C, News Broadcast. Question 6 is based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 10 seconds to answer the question. Now listen to the news.
Russian authorities are questioning 5 men suspected of taking about a dozen school children hostage and commandeering a helicopter for a $10 million ransom.The alleged gunmen were captured early Monday in southern Russia, ending a 4-day drama. The kidnappers initially demanded to be flown to Iran, but police now believe their only aim was $10 million paid by the government, most of which has now been recovered.
Question 7 is based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 10 seconds to answer the question. Now, listen to the news.
The United States has announced that it's to send 1,000 more troops to Panama to increase security at Cuban refugee camps, where riots broke out last week. Officials in Washington said that the troops will be added to the 2,000 who are already in Panama.More than 200 American soldiers were injured when the Cuban boat people, angry at delays in moving them out of Panama, attacked their guards and broke out of the camps. The refugees have been in Panama since September.
Question 8 is based on the following news. At the end of the news item,You will be given 10 seconds to answer the question. Now, listen to the news. U.S. lawmakers have criticized the recent U.S.-North Korean deal, calling for freezing Pyongyang's nuclear program in return for U.S. diplomatic and economic concessions. They express concern that the North may take the concessions and break the accord. Other lawmakers noted that inspection of Pyongyang's nuclear site is not required for at least 5 years. The U.S. chief negotiator defended the accord, saying he had made no compromises that would damage U.S. national security. Questions 9 and 10 are based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 20 seconds to answer the two questions. Now, listen to the news.
Italy, a major producer of landmines, has joined the campaign to ban the weapons which kill and maim many thousands of people every year. The Chamber of Deputies, the lower house of parliament, voted 402-2,with 4 abstentions to ratify a 1980 convention that will commit Italy to drastically limit the use of landmines and help to clear mined areas. Parliament also pledged Italy support for efforts led by the Security General of the United Nations, the International Red Cross, and the Swedish government to promote a total international ban on the production and export of the mines.The Italian Parliament acted at the request of Defense Minister.
This is the end of listening comprehension.Please proceed to the next part. Sample Test 3 Part 1 Listening Comprehension Section A Mini Lecture In this section you will hear a mini lecture. You will hear the lecture once only. While listening, take notes on the important points. Your notes will not be marked, but you will need them to complete a gap-filling task on Answer Sheet 1 after the mini lecture. Use the blank sheet for note-taking. Now, listen to the mini lecture.
People in Britain speak English with different accents, according to where they come from, what kind of social status they have, or what kind of education they've received, etc. Among the various accents, there is one that has achieved a certain eminence. It's called received pronunciation, RP. And this accent is also generally preferred for teaching English as a foreign language and for reading BBC news bulletins. Why is it so? Let's take a look at how it evolved over the years, its features, its present status, etc. Received pronunciation has its historical origins in a dialect of English spoken particularly in the region stretching southeast from the Midlands, which is in the central part of England, down towards London, the capital city. The two historic university cities of Cambridge and Oxford, though outside this region, are also considered as the place of origin for the dialect. The dialect survived because of its association with centres of power and influence. It was spoken by the merchant classes of London in the 14th century, for example, and would have been familiar to students attending the universities of Oxford and Cambridge in the Middle Ages. Its status as an important dialect was enhanced by its use in government and official documents from about 1430 onwards. More recently, its association since the 19th century with public schools helped to achieve special preeminence for its distinctive patterns of pronunciation. So we can see in the United Kingdom at least, this accent is usually associated with a higher social or educational background, with the BBC and certain professions, and is most commonly taught to students learning English as a foreign language. For many such students, it is the only accent they are prepared to learn, and a teacher who does not use it may have difficulty in finding a position as a teacher of English in certain non-English-speaking countries. Other names for this accent are the Queen's English, Oxford English, and BBC English. As the accent has lost its former regional affiliations, it is now the most widely understood and spoken of all the accents within the British Isles. So, what are the most interesting characteristics of RP? Firstly, the relatively very small number of speakers who use it do not identify themselves as coming from any particular geographical region. Secondly, RP is largely confined to England, and there it is a non-localized accent. Thirdly, RP is a class accent. In England, the higher the social class of a speaker, the less the regional accent, and also the use of local words and grammatical forms. As we have seen, RP, a non-regional accent based on the speech of the great public schools, has been accepted as a standard inside England for well over a century. Increasingly, however, there has been a tendency for the accent of educated people in southeastern England to replace strict RP as the standard. RP has lost some of its prestige, as people educated at public schools have lost their monopoly of power and education. A considerable part has been played by the great post-war expansion of higher education. Today, the majority of university students are not speakers of RP. Most school teachers, too, do not use RP, but an educated regional accent. This is not to say that RP has lost all its magic. It still has prestige, for example, in the financial and banking sectors, among senior government officials and officers of the armed forces. Moreover, since it has been so fully described, it is the accent usually taught to foreigners learning British English. But the public schools are no longer felt to have a monopoly of correct speech, and the prestige of educated regional speech has risen enormously during the past half century. Since an educated southeastern accent is fairly similar to RP, there is a tendency nowadays for this to be regarded as a standard. It is the accent used, for example, by many radio and television announcers and presenters. On the other hand, there has been a rise in the prestige of all regional accents in Britain, and it is probable that we are moving towards the American position, in which it is normal and acceptable for a speaker to use an educated regional accent, and there is no supra-regional class accent.
Now you have 2 minutes to check your notes, and then complete the gap-filling task on answer sheet 1 in 10 minutes. In sections B and C, you will hear everything once only. Listen carefully and then answer the questions that follow. Mark the correct answer to each question on your answer sheet. Section B. Interview. Questions 1 to 5 are based on an interview. At the end of the interview, you will be given 10 seconds to answer each of the following questions. Now, listen to the interview.
Mrs. Harrison, thanks very much for coming down here to the station. I know you've been through a terrible situation here today. I'd just like to go over some of the things that you told Sergeant Clark at the bank.
All right.
Would you like a cup of tea?
No, I'm fine.
All right.
Thanks.
Well, could you describe the two people who robbed the bank for this report we're filling out here? Now, anything at all that you can remember would be extremely helpful to us.
Well, I can only remember basically what I said before.
That's all right.
The man was tall, about 6 feet, and he had dark hair.
Dark hair?
And he had a moustache.
Very good. All right, did he have any other distinguishing marks? I mean scars, for example, anything like that?
Scars? No. No, none that I can remember.
Do you remember how old he was, by any chance?
Well, I guess around 30.
Around 30?
Maybe younger, plus or minus a few years.
All right. Do you remember anything about what he might have been wearing?
Yes. He had on a dark sweater, a solid colour. You know, the kind of colour young people fancy nowadays.
Anything else that strikes you at the moment?
I remember he was wearing a light shirt under the sweater, a cotton one with dark, I think, dark stripes. It looked like a good brand.
Ah, very good.
Yes.
All right now, can you tell us anything about the female robber, Mrs. Harrison?
Well, I remember that she did most of the talking. She had the gun pointed at us and she told us to lie down and not to move if we knew what was good for us. I remember it just felt like she was pointing the gun right at me. And my little daughter was right next to me, and she was just so frightened.
Mrs. Harrison, could you describe her for us?
She was wearing a wool sweater.
Ah, very good.
I remember it was a dark colour, navy blue or dark grey.
Dark grey,
And I guess she was in her late 20s. Her hair was short, very short, and a bit curly.
Do you remember how tall she was?
About the same as myself, around 5'4".
5'4", All right, do you remember anything else about this woman?
Yes, I remember that the woman was wearing a pendant around her neck. I remember specifically because I was then near the counter, next to the bank manager, and my little daughter started to cry. And this woman came up to me, and she was very rude to my daughter. So I had a good look at her, and she was sort of pulling on the chain and playing with the pendant.
Oh?
It was gold. Anyway, it looked like gold, and it got a strange shape.
Did either of them have any other noticeable characteristics, Mrs. Harrison? Now, just take a moment.
No, I don't.
To think about this.
No, no, and this is really all I can remember.
Well, did either of them wear glasses?
No. No, I'm sure of that.
All right, Mrs. Harrison, I really appreciate what you've been through today. I'm just going to ask you to look at some photographs before you leave, if you don't mind. It won't take very long. Can you do that for me?
All right.
Would you like to step this way with me, please?
Okay, sure.
Thank you.
Section C, News Broadcast. Questions 6 and 7 are based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 20 seconds to answer the two questions. Now listen to the news. The UN agency, the World Food Programme, says Iraq is facing a food crisis which is causing enormous damage to its population, especially its children. The agency said more and more Iraqis were spending their whole day struggling to find food for survival, and the social fabric of the nation was disintegrating. It said an entire generation of children was being harmed irreparably, and the country was at a point of no return. WFP says that 60% of Iraq's population, that's 12 million people, are struggling to survive because of food shortages. Food for the average family costs the equivalent of $26 a month. The devaluation of the Iraqi dinar means that few can afford this. Levels of severe malnutrition among children under 5 now compare with sub-Sahara in Africa. The infant mortality rate has risen by more than 700% compared with before the Gulf War. Many donor states say that the Baghdad government should take the blame for this because it refuses to raise money for food by selling oil through the UN as the sanction rules allow. WFP is asking for $122 million to help feed 2 million people, mostly those under 5 or over 70. That's double the size of last year's program, although the agency says it's still a fraction of the real need. WFP also acknowledges that it's unlikely that governments around the world will respond fully to this appeal. Question 8 is based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you'll be given 10 seconds to answer the question. Now, listen to the news.
France and the US have signed an accord to share sensitive information on nuclear weapons. US and French officials say the agreement is aimed at maintaining the reliability and safety of the two countries' nuclear stockpiles. As part of the accord, the US will share with France its computer data on simulated nuclear explosions. Until now, the US data were shared only with Britain. Officials say the agreement will help the two countries maintain their arsenals after they sign a global treaty expected later this year that bans all nuclear testing.
Questions 9 and 10 are based on the following news. At the end of the news item, you will be given 20 seconds to answer the two questions. Now, listen to the news.
The University of Michigan carries out a survey of the drug habits among young people every year. And this year it's concluded that teenage drug use is rapidly getting worse. 25% of teenagers surveyed said they'd used an illegal drug at some time in their lives, an increase of 3% from the figures for 1993. Marijuana use is climbing back towards levels not seen since the late 1970s, and today's marijuana is up to 10 times more potent than in the past. Cocaine use, which leveled off in the early 1990s, is also making a comeback among 13 to 15-year-olds. And LSD, which had dropped considerably in the 1980s, is also on the rise. Officials involved in the survey say the results indicate that young people no longer see drugs as dangerous. Instead, the researchers say, they are viewed as glamorous or trendy. The health secretary said it was time to sound the alarm, and the secretary calls for a powerful anti-drug message to be sent to children, with parents leading the way.
This is the end of listening comprehension. Please proceed to the next part. Sample test 4. Part 1. Listening comprehension. Section A. Mini lecture. In this section you will hear a mini lecture. You will hear the lecture once only. While listening, take notes on the important points. Your notes will not be marked, but you will need them to complete a gap-filling task on answer sheet 1 after the mini lecture. Use the blank sheet for note-taking. Now, listen to the mini-lecture. It is common nowadays for companies and industries to sponsor big sports events. For example, many companies sponsored the 8th National Games held in Shanghai in 1997. Then, what exactly do companies and industries get out of sponsoring big sports events, such as international games? And why do they do so? There is an obvious answer and a not-so-obvious one. The obvious answer is that they get known worldwide, particularly if they are the principal sponsor of an event. This is especially important when you consider the number of countries around the world that might show the event on TV. The not-so-obvious answer is that sponsorship can help firms to save money. Then how can they save money in this way? Companies can claim expenditures on sponsorship or support to sport and the arts against the amount of tax that they owe. So, if they are going to have to pay tax anyway, why not spend the money on promoting their name or product? However, sponsorship is surely a very expensive business. So, how does one decide which events or activities to support? Companies spend a lot of time making sure that they have a perfect match between the products to be represented and the activity that needs sponsorship. Basically, companies have to make sure that the image is right and that the product gets maximum coverage through the event. I mean, you wouldn't expect a company whose product has a young international image to sponsor a sport that has a following among older people. There are all sorts of reasons behind sponsorship. That's what the game's about for those who are trying to sell it. There are some important points to consider before agreeing to sponsor an event. First and foremost, I suppose, is the popularity of the event. In global terms, I mean. Events like the World Cup and the Olympics have business queuing up to offer sponsorship. There are the big media events, hours and hours of TV and satellite coverage guaranteed all over the world, as well as press coverage and the possibility of photographs that in some way advertise your product. Most events aren't quite like that, though. I suppose you've got the national games every 4 years in China, but most events appeal to only a limited proportion of the potential audience. Tennis, for example. Most of the audience there is young, so products for the young are the ones that you would associate with the event. Then how do you match up the product with the event? The most important thing with the smaller event is to identify the audience it's going to appeal to. In this instance, tennis and young people. That should attract drinks manufacturers, sports fashion designers, cosmetics producers, and so on. Then you look at the potential coverage in the media. It's the sort of event that might attract Coca-Cola or Pepsi, maybe even McDonald's. In sponsoring sports events, it is not just the media coverage that matters. The important question is whether the people who've either been to the event or read about it in the press will be more likely to buy your product as a result. A lot of the advantages of investment in sponsorship are longer term. People who have possibly read about or watched an event on TV may not even be able to tell you who is sponsoring the event, yet will react favorably if asked to comment on products marketed by the sponsoring company. They have been conditioned in some way. Conditioning the mind is what advertising is about. Believe it or not, straight advertising is a far more expensive way of promoting your image than sponsorship. And what's more, sponsorship is mostly tax-free. To sum up, today we have talked about sponsorship of sports events by companies, the reasons behind, and a few related points. I hope this will help you gain some insight into the issue. Now you have 2 minutes to check your notes, and then complete the gap-filling task on answer sheet 1 in 10 minutes.
Bye.